Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the American hero, Ralph Nader.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Wow. Woo. What a rousing Oregonian welcome. Woo! Wow. Well, see. Well, thank you very much, Greg. Thank all of you for coming. It looks like there are over 10,000 people here. Over 10,000 people. That's equal to the whole population of my hometown in Connecticut. Which leads me to a little calculation. Judging by how many people voted here in Oregon in the last presidential election, if everybody here between now and November, talking, consulting, speaking, chatting, can bring in, each of you can bring in 40 votes between now and November from your friends and relatives and neighbors and co-workers, the Nader-LeDuc ticket will carry Oregon. That's it. 40. Now let me ask you, are all of you going to try to each bring in 40 votes by November? Thank you. That's a pretty realistic possibility. But as my mother used to say, determination puts your dreams on wheels, and so we really have to be determined. And remember, week after week, talk it up, pamphlet, call radio talk shows, chat with your co-workers, have dinner with your relatives and friends, and bring them out. Because right here in this arena are the seeds for the votes that will carry the state of Oregon for the Green Party ticket in November. Now, before we get down to the major objectives of this campaign and go through them one by one, and they are really big objectives, but they're realizable, they're long overdue, we have the resources for it, our Constitution enables it, the majority of the people want them, and we're going to go for it. Let's just talk a little bit about George W. Bush and Al Gore. George W. Bush lends himself to summary indictment. His record in Texas is so abysmal. But I think his presidential campaign may be unconstitutional. You know why? Because George W. Bush is really a giant corporation running for presidency disguised as a person. He said that he's running for the presidency of the United States based on his record in Texas. And he's gonna do to the United States what he did to Texas. Well, let's run through the list. Are you here in Oregon ready for the following, as George W. Bush has done in Texas? Texas ranks number one in total criteria air pollutants released. Texas ranks number one in total toxic air emissions. Ranks number one in carbon dioxide emissions. Number one in overall emission of toxic chemicals. Number one in the emission of cancer-causing chemicals. Number one in the production of hazardous waste. Number one in the number of facilities in significant violation of clean water permits. It ranks second to last in per capita spending on water quality. Well, is that what he wants to do for the rest of the United States? What do you say to George W. Bush on that record? Well, but then he says he's a compassionate conservative. By the way, I wonder where that leaves an ordinary run-of-the-mill conservative without an adjective. He says, leave no children behind. His record is better capsulized in the phrase, leave no corporate dollars behind. Well, here's how the compassionate conservative governed Texas. Texas is 46th in the number of mothers receiving prenatal care, 48th in child immunization rates, number two in the number of malnourished citizens, number two in child hunger, number two, 45th in per capita spending on public health. Imagine that. And they have very serious public health problems, especially on the border. It's fair to say that Governor Bush has worked against the interests of working people and children and the environment and the rights of people to have their full day in court when they were wrongfully injured and want to sue the perpetrators of their harm, like the corporate polluters who are campaigning and funding George W. Bush Incorporated. He's also the corporate welfare king of all presidential candidates. Having bought into the Texas Rangers baseball team with a $600,000 investment, he and his allies then made sure that the new stadium was built with taxpayer dollars, inflated the value of the team, and 2 years ago he sold the $600,000 investment for a profit of $14 million. So he knows about corporate welfare, doesn't he? Now, what about Al Gore? Al Gore, who is going to come to this state next week, and he's going to say, I'm going to fight for you. You've heard that one, haven't you? Well, at his convention last week in Los Angeles, he said he's going to fight for the people against the big HMOs, the big oil companies, the big drug companies, the big insurance companies, and the corporate polluters. And so I challenged him on Monday in front of the Staples Center, and I said, Mr. Gore, if you're going to find anyone in America who's going to believe your populist rhetoric, hustle together all the millions of dollars that you and the Democratic National Committee have gotten from these very industries and corporations and send it back to them. He's not going to do that, you can be sure. The man with the forked tongue, the man who widens the difference between the word and the deed, the man who spent 8 years with Bill Clinton crawling in front of corporate power one day after another, the man who talks environment and acts cowardliness, the man who has a hard time conveying credibility. But the Gore campaign officially, when asked about our campaign, the official word is they're not worried about it. The official word is they're not losing any sleep over our campaign. To which I reply, slumber on, Al Gore, slumber on. I hope some of you will go over to his rally next week and give him some of your free speech. You know, Dick Cheney has been campaigning on the West Coast and in Ventura, California. A couple nights ago, he had a dinner which cost participants $25,000. $25,000 to have a dinner with Dick Cheney. And then I understand he's up here in the Northwest where you have to pay $5,000 to shake his hand. Well, let me tell you, what do you think it'll cost? What do you think it's worth to have dinner with Winona LaDuke? Priceless! Priceless! Last week MasterCard sued me for the priceless ad. And in an ironic twist, they said that I infringed on their trademark on the word priceless, having put a price on priceless. It's just part of the corporate effort to corporatize our dictionary, word by word, phrase by phrase. But in their complaint, which was worthy of Saturday Night Live, they accused me of willfully and knowingly trying to enhance our presidential campaign by taking advantage of the popular reputation and status of MasterCard. So I had a press conference the next day at the National Press Club in Washington, listing all the fraud and the gouging and the interest rates and the penalties and the fees and the invasion of privacy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right, now let's go into what the objectives of this campaign are. And let me tell you. The extremists, the corporate extremists who are opposing most of these objectives, who are constantly saying no. No to people who say stop polluting us. No to people who say stop corrupting our government. No to people who say stop making our government turn against us. No to people who say stop commercializing childhood and exploiting kids with the most disgusting, violent, pornographic entertainment, so-called. So, number one is full public financing of public elections for federal office. We will say to the giant corporations and the corporate supremacists who think that everything has a dollar sign on it, who think that our democracy is for sale, our government is for sale, our environment is for sale, our childhood is for sale, our human genes are for sale, our privacies are for sale. We are going to remove the roadblocks to a strong, deep democracy by getting private money and cash register politics out of our federal elections and out of the Congress and out of the White House. You saw the Republican and Democratic convention. They were marinated in corporate cash, logos, corporate hospitality suites, all kinds of money funneling in. It was like legalized bribery confronting legalized extortion. It was the corporate fat cats were paying off the politicians for present and future favors, and the politicians were shaking down the corporate fat cats. And when the corporate fat cats finished in Philadelphia at the Republican convention, they took a few days off, hopped on the plane, and flew to Los Angeles for the Democrat convention. This is called equal opportunity corruption of our two major political parties. Now, Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat, Wisconsin, one of the few great senators in the Senate, he said during the Democratic National Convention, quote, "I'm sorry to say it, but the big story at the Democratic Convention is really influence buying and peddling," end quote. There you have it, from the man who is trying more than almost anyone else in the Senate to get the corruption of money, the dirty money politics, out of Washington, D.C. The states are leading the way here. Maine, Vermont, Arizona, and now here in Oregon. Yes, on Measure 6. Now, the next priority. This is the scar on our conscience as a nation. The richest nation in the world. The nation that likes to be number one in everything. The nation that says they're concerned for children. They're concerned for American people. The goal, it's about time. It's about 80 years overdue. It's 30 to 40 years past what Western European countries have essentially done. We will open up a major campaign to abolish once and for all poverty and child poverty in the United States of America. Thank you. Thank you. With tens of millions of poor people, if they get a job working poor and for a non-living wage in Kmart, McDonald's, Walmart, all these big companies that are reporting record profits on the sweat of workers who can't even meet their family needs. Even if there's a two-income family, they can't meet their family needs. Less than one think this is an avant-garde suggestion. It was Richard Nixon, as President of the United States in the 70s, who proposed a national minimum income policy for everybody in the United States, and Congress rebuffed him. Now, I say, in the year 2000 AD, we ought to be able to catch up with Richard Nixon, wouldn't you say? Number three, again, decades too overdue. Again, decades after Western European countries provided this protection for all its people. We are going to move, not step by step, we are going to move as fast as possible for universal health insurance that's accessible and preventive health. With $110 billion drained from the health care billing system due to billing fraud and abuse every year, with over $160 billion that can be saved in administrative expenses, there is plenty of resources to cover the 46 million Americans without health insurance and to make sure the rest don't fall through the cracks of co-payments and deductions and exclusions and pre-existing conditions and all the rest of the terrible attractions that we have to endure. And in case we need any more money to establish this essential human right, that nobody should be sick without treatment, nobody should be exposed to maladies without strategies of health prevention. Nobody should have to die because they don't
have enough money to pay for medical care. If there isn't, if there isn't enough money from these two sources, I have a suggestion where the money can come from. If you walk into a store today and you buy a book or you buy furniture, in most states you pay sales tax. But you know, the fat cats on Wall Street who buy millions of shares and hundreds of thousands of options every day and trillions of dollars of transactions every week, they don't pay any sales tax. And it's time for a tax on stock transactions. The speculator. It's time. It's time to tax the things we don't like the polluters, like the speculators. Fourth, tens of millions of people in this country are obstructed from forming trade unions. We have the most restrictive anti-labor laws in the Western world. We're down to less than 10% of the workers unionized in our private economy, the lowest in 60 years. And the results are that the majority of the workers today are making less money in real dollars than they made 20 and 25 years ago. And the result is that 47 million Americans are working every day and not working for a livable wage. And so what we need once and for all, not only to tell the Republicans, not only to tell the Democrats, but to tell some of the leaders of the international unions to say unequivocally that their top priority, like the Green Party's top priority, like the Blue-Green Coalition's top priority, is the full repeal of that chokehold on American labor, the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947. And it's about time that workers got a capital share in the capital trillions in this country, instead of just having to work paycheck to paycheck. Or if they're real poor, payday loan to payday loan at 200, 300, 400% interest by the loan sharks. It is time for the workers in this country to have capital investments as part of their sweat and toil and not leave it all to the corporate executives and fat cats. Fifth, the polls say that education is right up at the top, and George W. Bush thinks that there should be more education for children and youngsters in our country. I often wonder, why does he keep emphasizing it? But after I hear him, I understand why. Because he needs more education than the rest of them. But after you repair the schools, have preschool instruction, after you have decent materials and decent facilities and safety in the schools and good teachers, there's something else that's missing in the dialogue on education. What are the children learning? What are they learning? Are they basically in a trade school to provide themselves with alleged skills after they graduate from college? Is that all there is to it? Are they just in the process of memorization to regurgitation to vegetation? Or do we want them to learn how to practice democracy, to learn civic skills, to connect the classroom with the community, to learn how to be upstanding citizens? As my father once told me when I was 10 years old and I came home from school, he asked me, he said, "Ralph, what did you do today in school? Did you learn how to think or did you learn how to believe?" Well, are we just teaching our children how to believe? How to believe the commercialization of their education? Are we teaching them how to think in order to become strong, confident citizens leading our country and the world in the future through their education? That's what we should be doing. Six. The biggest welfare problem of all, corporate welfare. We pledge, to use the common parlance, we pledge to end once and for all corporate welfare as we know it. Without a 5-year cutoff period. No more aid to dependent corporations that are making tons of money and are receiving our subsidies, handouts, giveaways, bailouts, as we witness these giant corporations draining away from local and state and federal budgets hundreds of billions of dollars a year, which can be used for neighborhood needs, for affordable housing, for public transit, for abolishing child poverty, for establishing public health, community health facilities, and community mental health facilities. And let me tell you a little story. The Green Party in Connecticut. And I heard a couple years ago that the NFL Patriots football team, was willing to come to Hartford if the state government gave them $500 million to build a new stadium and a practice field and to pay for the skyboxes that they couldn't fill on the shore of the Connecticut River. And the governor said, when he proposed this, it's not about football only. It's about the spirit. And the Republican governor presented it to the Democratic legislature, and in a quick move with hardly a hearing, they passed this $500 million corporate welfare package for the NFL football Patriots. This is the same governor who turned down $200 million to repair Hartford's public schools, which are in a state of medieval disrepair. Well, the Green Party and I had a press conference against overwhelming public opinion in favor of the football stadium, against both political parties in favor, against all the corporations in favor. After all, they get the skyboxes. Against all the press and the TV stations in favor. And we had a press conference, and I opened it by saying, this stadium will never be built. And the Green Party went to work, forming a broad-based coalition from Greenwich stockbrokers to blue-collar workers in Willimantic and New Britain, from conservative tax opponents to environmentalists. And in 4 months, we took that package apart line by line until the whole state turned against it and the Patriots went back to Boston.